everyone, and thank you for joining me for this podcast all about the origins of attraction. Attraction can be defined as a particular liking or a desire for another individual. We might talk about the allure or charm of a person that we're attracted to, or say that we're fascinated, enchanted, or seduced even by them. Attraction can also be defined as, I guess you could say, magnetism. We feel drawn to those who we are attracted to, perhaps because of a particular physical feature or personality trait. Sometimes we feel an attraction to someone, but we can't really explain why. We might say there's just something about them. We might perceive attraction as a free choice, but researchers and scientists have provided a number of different explanations about how attraction actually happens. Physiological theories can be divided into evolutionary explanations, which are based on primitive instincts to mate and to be looked after, essentially, and biological explanations, which examine the role of hormones and neurotransmitters in the process of attraction. Other explanations focus on psychological concepts such as perceived similarities, while social explanations examine the role that vicinity and experience can play in attraction. So let's talk a little bit about the evolutionary origins of attraction. What do men and women find attractive in a potential mate? Well, the basic assumption of evolutionary explanations is that any behaviour that has survived must have an adaptive quality. The purpose of an adaptation is to ensure the survival of an individual so that it can reproduce, ensuring the survival of the species to which it belongs. Romantic love has evolved to ensure mate selection, reproduction, and protection, which all depend, in the first instance, on attraction. Scientist Buss in 1979 found that males are generally attracted to females who are younger than themselves and who possess this hourglass figure with a small waist relative to a larger bust and hips. Now, it's suggested that these characteristics symbolise youth, fertility and reproductive potential. Females are more attracted, according to the studies, to older males who are perceived to have sufficient resources to provide for them and any children that they might conceive together. Evidence has been drawn from the analysis of Lonely Hearts columns, which demonstrate that females tend to, advertise their youth and physical appearance, while males tend to advertise material possessions and professional or financial status. Cross-cultural research shows similarities in the qualities that males and females seek in a romantic partner, with males being more attracted to physical features and females being more attracted to resources. Now, this further supports an evolutionary explanation of attraction. Well, let's just think about this question. Can the Lonely Hearts columns, so basically like adverts in newspapers, provide evidence for an evolutionary origin of attraction? Well, the universal preference by males for a female with this hourglass figure appears to relate to potential fertility, and it also provides a visual clue that a woman is not already pregnant. But how else can a male know if a female is fertile? Well, non-human animals have obvious ways of letting potential mates know that they are in fact fertile. For example, female chimps' genitals swell and turn pink during their fertile period. There is actual evidence to suggest that a woman's menstrual cycle influences her level of attractiveness. A study found that women were rated as more facially attractive when they were at their peak of their fertility and less attractive when they were not at a fertile stage of their menstrual cycle. Again, this supports an evolutionary basis for attraction. If anyone is interested, that was a particular study in 2004 by Roberts, if anyone wants to research that a little bit further. Attraction might be based on more subtle indicators than appearance and financial security. Research has been carried out on human and non-human animals, which identified the role of major histocompatibility complex, or MHC genes, that in humans may be symbolised by body odour. Now, Wiedekind, in 1995, I believe it was, found that both men and women are more attracted to the body odour of partners whose MHC genes are different to their own. Now, this preference for MHC dissimilar mates leads to a stronger immune system in potential offspring, therefore leading to healthier children with a greater chance of survival. So let's go into detail about the biological origins of attraction. So biological explanations about the origins of attraction focus on the role of hormones and neurotransmitters. These chemical substances are released when we are attracted to someone. They make us feel good, which rewards the attraction and makes us want to maintain it. A study by Fisher found that people who are in love have similar brain activity and release fairly comparable levels of dopamine to individuals who are high on cocaine. Now, this suggests a biological component of attraction, and it supports the idea that love can feel addictive or become obsessive. Other studies have found that individuals in love have lower levels of serotonin than individuals who are not in love. They also found that when men are in love, they secrete higher levels of the female hormone, estrogen. And when women are in love, they actually secrete higher levels of the male hormone, testosterone. That finding supports the observation that people in love are perceived to be more attractive because they are biologically predetermined to be attracted to others themselves. Now, at the start of the podcast, I mentioned the psychological origins of attraction, this attraction similarity. So let's just expand on that a little bit. Well, evidence suggests that we are most likely to be attracted to individuals whom we are similar to, or whom we perceive ourselves to be similar to. It also suggests that we're motivated to perceive our friends and our romantic partners as more similar to us than those people who aren't our friends, I guess. This is a cognitive concept known as attraction similarity. Researcher Newcomb in 1961 found that college roommates that were initially similar were more likely to like each other a year after they had met than those who were perceived as dissimilar. Surveys demonstrated that married couples tend to be similar in sociological characteristics such as age, race, religion, and educational achievement. This also supports the concept of attraction similarity. Furthermore, a longitudinal study of 135 married couples found a positive correlation between similarity and marital satisfaction. So in other words, couples that felt they were similar to each other were happier than couples that perceived themselves, again, as dissimilar. But one question that I guess this raises is whether attraction is all in the mind. A further psychological explanation for attraction is something called transference. So this is a psychodynamic concept, which suggests that we are attracted to individuals who remind us of someone who we were attracted to, but in the past. Now, this theory could explain the anecdotal suggestion that men are likely to marry someone like their mothers, while women are likely to marry someone like their fathers. It could also explain why individuals tend to have a particular type who they are attracted to. Chen and Anderson, back in 1999, attempted to study the concept of transference and found that participants were more attracted to people that they were told were similar to a significant person that they had found attractive to in the past. But how does that tally with social origins of attraction? Well, here we look at the theory of proximity. That suggests that we have a tendency to like and be attracted to individuals that simply live close to us, within the same vicinity, rather than those who live just further away. It sounds quite odd, but it is a fascinating concept. Research has found that friendships and romantic relationships in college dormitories and in residential homes for the elderly are more likely between those whose rooms are closer to one another than those whose rooms are further apart. However, advances in information technology have affected the concept of proximity. It's now possible to be close, I guess you could say, to people on the other side of the world through social and digital media. So that proximity has taken on a whole new meaning. Dating websites and applications have broken down the barriers of physical distance by bringing potential partners nearer through smartphones and computers. So attraction in terms of proximity in the 21st century might have more to do with the social and or the dating websites that people utilise and less to do with who lives in the flat next door. Additional research suggests that familiarity is a more important foundation for attraction than proximity, i.e. we're attracted to people because they're familiar, not because they're near. So for example, there is evidence that after 2 years, familiarity was the best indicator of liking in roommates. This was a 1961 study by Newcomb. This explanation supports the idea that when we get to know someone better, we perceive that person to be more attractive than when we initially met them. There is evidence, again, to support the concept of familiarity. So, for example, another study found that police cadets who were assigned seats alphabetically were more likely to rate someone as a friend who was closer in the alphabet to them. Sounds really odd, but the researcher Seagal, who carried this out, suggested that the cadets with alphabetically similar names just simply got to know each other better, and that their familiarity developed into actual friendships. In this podcast, I've outlined some of the explanations about the origins of attraction from a variety of different psychological perspectives. It's important that we discuss these explanations and talk about relevant research here, because ultimately all of these ideas have their own strengths and limitations. They're very similar in some respects and very different in others, but I think we can all agree that no matter which concept you most likely agree with from all the ones that I've mentioned in this podcast, it is a fascinating subject to talk about. I want to thank everybody for joining me and listening to this particular one. I want to thank our sponsors, also Curriculum Press, for providing content for me to use for this podcast. And as always, if you have any questions at all, do get in touch at kytosbiology@gmail.com. Until next time.